Morning, everyone. And take a moment and fill out that Connect card. If you would, please, you can do that online, or there should be a paper Connect card in front of you as well. We'll just take a quick moment to do that. And actually, you could keep filling that out while I'm talking. That's totally fine, too. It's good to be back here. I don't think I've preached in like 5 or 6 weeks. We had like just a wonderful group of people preaching during our spiritual practices series, including Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. I've been on vacation for a few weeks, and then I went a couple weeks. I did some traveled and did some learning. And while I was away, two separate people came up to me and said, "Hey, you know, like I just have this feeling from the Lord that you're supposed to get a new house." Which is actually great news, because I was like, okay, so you're going to pay for it for me then? And what does that mean? Is that like, is this prelude to the, here's the deed? No, it was just more like, no, I have this feeling that you're supposed to get a new house, which is awesome. Because if you've been here for a while, you've heard me talk about our house. You've heard me say that our house is a metaphor for suffering. The house that we live in Chicago, we've had all sorts of trouble with it. It was one of these places that looked really nice cosmetically because they were renting it out, but it wasn't those places that, you know, like underneath, apparently there were some problems with it. So how many of you, like, you know what plaster is? So walls were plaster. How many of you know that you can put drywall in front of it? How many of you know that you're not supposed to actually do that? Well, that's what happened in our house. So, like, here's the thing. If you've got, like, drywall in front of plaster, or you put the drywall under the plaster and the plaster is in the ceiling, if there's a leak, what ends up happening is the plaster gets really heavy. So you can't actually see the leak because, you know, you got, like, the drywall there, the plaster gets really heavy. And then what happens is your ceiling falls through. I just want you to know that that's actually what happens. I have personal experience with that. That's what happened in our bathroom. Then when they were doing the work, I mean, it was just like a boom. We were like wondering what was actually happening. We came out and it was like, all the ceiling was on the ground. And then we looked at the PVC that was sort of like all of our plumbing. And it basically looked like, an experiment in urban planning gone wrong. Like all these PVC pipes is, you know, just like all over, kind of like not organized really, just up there. Kind of like, well, this was going to happen actually, because it was clear that there wasn't a lot of planning done with the whole plumbing thing. Anyway, all that to say, getting a new house sounds like a pretty good idea to me. So I go home and I talk to my wife about it. And guess what happens when I talk to my wife? Have a conversation with my wife, Brittany, about it. Didn't take long for that conversation to become conflict. We started having conflict with each other. Listen, my wife and I, we agree on just about everything. So we agree on the direction of our lives. We want our lives to honor God. We agree on being here at this church. We think this is the place that we're supposed to be. We agree on just about everything. We agree about how much we value our kids. We agree on living life for the kingdom. We agree on all of that. Our lives are pointed in the same direction. We want to serve God with all that we have, and yet we have conflict. Conflict. So what's that conflict about? A conflict was about values. So conflict inevitably occurs when you're not on the same page when it comes to values. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like, you've probably experienced that for yourself. You've got so much going for you in a relationship or a friendship, and then it all starts to fall apart, and you're like, what actually happened? You know, maybe you think, I'd like to go on vacation, and your spouse is like, let's go on vacation, and your spouse is frugal, and you, like, want to experiment and try new things, and so your spouse packs, like, a cooler full of bologna sandwiches. And you're, like, in the car, and you're like, are you hungry? And you're thinking, well, maybe we stop somewhere, you know. But then, like, there's a cooler of bologna sandwiches in the back, and you can smell it. You know, it's just in the car. You can just smell it. It's like, that's the thing that happens with bologna. You put it in a cooler, and even though there's ice, it just seeps out of all the little holes. You know what I'm talking about? Does anybody know what I'm talking about? Bologna sandwiches. Like, I'm not a fan of bologna sandwiches. I don't know if you like bologna sandwiches. So if you like bologna sandwiches, I apologize for what I'm about to say. I don't like them. When I was growing up as a little kid, you know, a Korean immigrant kid, my parents were like, we do not want to give you Korean food because Korean food smells a certain way. Well, it turns out bologna sandwiches smell a certain way too. But they put bologna sandwiches in my lunchbox. They thought, this is what American kids eat. And I thought, how are American kids growing, eating this stuff? I just never liked it, right? But what was that conflict about? You know, in the car with the bologna sandwich and the cooler and it smells like bologna in your car. Well, that's the conflict about values, right? So maybe you're a student and maybe you're like, hey, I want to go to college. I want to go to college in a different city. And your parents are like, we want you to go to college too. We want you to have a great life. We want you to flourish. We want you to have earning power, all that stuff, you know. So we want you to go to college too. But then you think, I want to go to college really far from you. And then your parents are like, we want you to go to college really close to us. The same direction, right? You both want the same thing, but you have a conflict about values. Or maybe, you're single, you get a roommate, you guys do that interview thing that you do because you don't really know the person that you're going to room with, right? You know what I'm talking about, the interview thing? You know, like, hey, I just want to find out a little bit about you, you know, like, would you be a good person to room with me? You know, so you have all these questions, you talk to one of them, you find out, wow, in so many ways, we are so similar. And then you start living together and you go, what happened? Does anybody have that experience? You're like, I really care about cleanliness. Clearly, my roommate doesn't. So what just happened? Well, values. When conflict happens, it's generally about values, right? It's not really about vision. Like, it's the same thing happens in churches, by the way. Like, pretty much every church's vision statement is the Great Commission. I mean, you go to a church website and you look for the vision statement, and it's pretty much some kind or some version of the Great Commission, which is found at the end of Matthew. Go out, therefore, go out into all the world, make disciples, right? I mean, that's pretty much what every church's mission statement is or vision statement is. Yet lots of conflict happens in churches. Well, why does that happen? Well, because of values. Because people aren't on the same page when it comes to values. People aren't on the same page when it comes to what are the things that we hold about our identity together, right? When I first arrived in 2019, I had this conversation with Steve that made it pretty clear that we needed to do a re-articulation of our values. I was like, Steve, what are our values? And I expected him to hand me a sheaf of paper, but what he did instead was he leaned back in his chair and said, here are our values, and rattled them off the top of his head. By the way, if you look for values on our website, you won't find any. Nowhere are they listed, actually. I mean, well, they're listed in our membership document. I don't know if you guys remember that or if you remember. Well, in the membership document, there are values. And it probably doesn't surprise you to learn that the values that Steve rattled off to me and the values that were in the membership packet were not quite the same. And so then we thought, okay, well, it's probably time. It's probably time to do this long process of re-articulating who we are. Because as I keep saying, who we are is just as important as what we believe, right? And as I keep saying, ways of being precede ways of doing. So our identity is our mission. So what is our identity? Well, we find out what our identity is through values. And so over the last 9 months, what we've been doing, the church council and the pastors have been in a dialogical conversation or dialogical process of coming up, discerning what our congregational values are. So that's it's happened over the last 9 months or so. The church council, for those of you who don't know, the church council is a group of volunteers who are kind of like our elders. So they oversee me, so I'm accountable to them. They oversee all of our legal and financial matters, you know. The people on our church council are Liz Phillips Jackson, I don't know if you know her, David Montgomery, Freddie Castillo, Marcelo Costilla, and Heather Logue. Those are the members of our church council. So we began this process of, let's rearticulate what our congregational values are. And so we've been in this process for the last 9 months. It's been back and forth. We've been wordsmithing. We've been looking at this. We've been praying. And we arrived at a list of values, and we thought we should communicate that to all of the church. And so over the next 6 to 7 weeks or so, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about each one of these values. And talk about who we are so that we can be on the same page. So as we do this wonderful thing in Chicagoland, reaching all of Chicagoland for Jesus, that we would know who we are, that we'd be on the same page as we do this work together. I mean, like, I'm under no illusion that these values are going to take as we as I just preached them. So this is something that we're going to keep revisiting, and we're going to keep talking about these values. This is the work that we've been doing. This is the work that we'll get to engage in doing, and hopefully no bologna sandwiches, all right? So if you like bologna sandwiches, I apologize. You can have them at your leisure, but I won't be partaking with you. Okay, anyway, here we go. First value. Nobody thinks that's funny. Nobody? Nobody at all. Okay, all right, thanks, Nick. I appreciate that. You know, just, I was like, what's the problem with bologna sandwiches? Cut to a picture of a bologna sandwich going, what's the problem? Right, anyway. All right, so the first of our values is simply this. Worship. The first value is worshiping the true and beautiful God. So for each one of these values, we're going to talk about why we chose it, and then talk about one or two of the many ways we express it. Right. So the first value is worshiping the true and beautiful God. And so what I'd like for us to do is I'd like for us to turn to the apocalyptic letter of Revelation. So if you've got that, that's the last book in your Bible. What we're going to do is we're going to look at Revelation chapter 5. Okay, we're going to look at that chapter together. Before I read the chapter, this chapter, a little background. Oh, by the way, while you're looking for that, it's also in your programs. You look at the book of Revelation. While you're looking for the book of Revelation, I just want to say, I mean, like, listen, we are in this spot right now as a church where we are sort of transitioning from the pre-COVID to post-COVID. And so now, I mean, like, I'm sure that you know that this is not the normal way that we do church. This looks like it looks like a TV studio, right? So why do we have this setup? We have this setup because lots of people watch online still. And so we have this as part of our hybrid setup, but this is not the hopeful future of our church. We will go back to a stage. We will go back to church that feels like church. So this is just kind of a liminal space. What could be more anchoring in this space than talking about these deeply held values that could unite us, all right? So the first value, worshiping the true and beautiful God, we're going to turn to the apocalyptic letter of Revelation for three reasons why this is our first value, all right? Before I read this chapter, what does apocalyptic mean? Apocalyptic comes from the Greek verb apokalypto, and what that verb means is to reveal, all right? And so this is an apocalyptic letter. It's a revelation of God's intention for the end of history, all right? So here's what happens at the end of time, right? So it's written to the church under intense persecution. So the church was being intensely persecuted by the Romans, and here in comes this letter to the early church at that time that was of tremendous encouragement to them, basically saying, here's what happens at the end, and guess what? Jesus triumphs. Jesus triumphs in the end. So take heart. Take heart, take heart. So that's what this book is about. And the episode that we're going to read from Revelation 5 is probably pretty familiar to you. If you've been in church for some time, you've probably recognize this passage before. Another quick word, the other thing that I want to say is, you know, our first value is worshiping the true and beautiful God. When we say God, sometimes we're referring to God the Father, but the one true God exists in three persons, the Trinity, right? The Godhead, right? So the one true God exists in the Father, in the Son, and the Holy Spirit, each of whom will make significant appearances in this series. But we're going to look at today in this passage is going to be manifestly about Jesus, all right? So I don't think I need to say anything more than that. Jesus is the revelation. He's the image of who God is, right? So remember, Philip was like, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us in John 14. And John's like, almost with incredulity, goes, well, how can you say that, Philip? Because anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. And so worshiping the true and beautiful God will be through the lens of Jesus, all right? So let's dive in. Revelation 5, verse 1. Then I saw in the hand of him who sat on the throne a scroll with writing on both sides and sealed with seven seals. All right, so what is this scroll? Well, the scroll is translated sometimes book. The scroll represents God's plan of judgment and redemption of all creation. It's like the divine plan of all history. And so if you keep reading the book of Revelation, you'll see that as each seal is broken, something gets enacted. So it's almost like creation when God is speaking and things come into being. Well, that's what this scroll is like. It's literally these words, these acts actually happen as the scrolls are broken, right? So this book is like a representation of the enactment of the divine plan for all of creation, all right? Okay, verse 2. And I saw a mighty angel proclaiming in a loud voice, "Who is worthy to break the seals and open the scroll?" Verse 3. But no one in heaven or on earth or under the earth, which is pretty interesting. Thank God no one under the earth could open the scroll, right? Could open the scroll or even look inside it. So here's John's response. I wept and wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll or look inside. Then one of the elders said to me, "Do not weep. See, Jesus, the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has triumphed. He is able to open the scroll and its seven seals." Here's the reason why worship is the first value, is our first value. We worship God because standing between what is and what will be is Jesus, the one who can enact the plan, the divine plan of all of history. Standing between what is and what will be is Jesus. We worship God because he gives us hope. We worship God because we see what is. All the world. I mean, hasn't these last 2 years been like sort of a stark revelation of what this world actually is about? I mean, like always see all the hopelessness, all the injustice. We see the systemic racism. Many of you have been victims of systemic racism. I know that I've had that leveraged against me. We know that people are being trafficked. We know that people are stuck in endless cycles of poverty. And we go, when will this all end? When will you open the scroll? When will you act? I mean, all of us who work tirelessly for justice, right, have gotten tired. How many of you have worked tirelessly for justice and gotten tired? How many of you look at the injustices in the world and go, when is this going to ever end? If you find yourself identifying with those underneath society, when are you might be asking the question, when are you going to open the scroll? Because I need some help here. I need some help here. You know, when I was a college student at the University of Chicago on the South Side, you know, toward my senior year, we would go around and we would like try to feed people, all the people that we could. I mean, we were poor college students, so didn't amount to very much, but we would still try to do it. And then one time I remember we're giving people rides, we'd give people meals, we'd pray for them. And I looked at my friend who was doing this with me and I said, when is this ever going to end? How much more of this can we do? Like, when are we going to get free from this cycle that keeps repeating itself of people just still being stuck? When is this ever going to happen? And so we, like John, we go, we weep and weep, and we go, who's going to open the scroll? Who is worthy to open the scroll? Who will enact the plan of God? If we can't, who can? Notice, no one in heaven and on earth and under the earth could even look into the scroll, right? So we're thinking, well, gosh, well, who's going to do it? Well, good news. The reason why we worship is because Jesus is the one who can open the scrolls and enact the plan of God to make all things new. We worship because standing in the space of who, what is and what will be is Jesus. I mean, listen, we are not some kind of nonprofit organization. We're not an NGO. We're not like an agency, you know, that has been started by like a public institution to actually like make things better. No, we are not that kind of institutional organization. We are a church. And the reason why we worship is because we know that the one person who can make anything and everything change and who can make all things new, can make things different, who can wipe away every tear is not like our own punny efforts, but Jesus himself. That's why we're here. This is a church. You know, we worship Jesus because we're like, we need a little divine intervention here. You know, and good news, he's the one who can actually make it happen. Between what is and what will be is Jesus. As Walter Brueggemann, to borrow words from Walter Brueggemann, Jesus makes the hopefulness of singing happen again. What is worship? Well, worship is the faithful embrace of the true king and the rejection of all the phony ones. Well, guess what? Our king is Jesus. That's why we're here. King's not me. I'm not the king. King is not any one of our pastors. Jesus is the king. We worship him because he's the one who can make all things new. He's the one who can empower our efforts. He's the one who can make sure that the good things that we do last. That's the first reason why worshiping our true and beautiful God is our first value. Right? Here's the second reason. Turn back to the text. Then I saw a lamb, verse 6, looking as if it had been slain, standing at the center of the throne, encircled by the four living creatures and the elders. The lamb had seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out into all the earth. Now, there's a lot of rich imagery here. I don't have time to explain all of it, but I just want to say, look, the lamb, who is the lamb? The lamb is Jesus. He who was, as Isaiah 53:7 tells us, led like a lamb to the slaughter. You know, in John 1:29, John the Baptist, what does he call Jesus when he sees Jesus approaching before his baptism? He says, look, see, it's the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Okay, so Jesus is the Lamb. You know, incidentally, the Apostle John calls Jesus the Lamb like no less than 28 times. And the reason why is because he's trying to recall the Passover. How many of you know the Passover, what that is, right? Like, so for those of you who grew up like me, you know, like I'm in, you know, like a Korean immigrant kid, and I grew up watching two movies every year. So my immigrant Korean home, just picture this, right? We grew up watching two movies every year. The first was Sound of Music. That happened at Christmas. The second was the Ten Commandments. Happened at Easter. So I was very confused. Don't know how these two things fit together, right? But anyway, in the Ten Commandments, in that movie, I mean, this is just like a sort of like a depiction of what actually happened during the Exodus, right? And so what's the Passover lamb? What does that mean actually? Well, the Passover was, you know, the blood of a lamb on the doorframe so that the angel of death would know not to pass, not to like put to death the people inside, right? Jesus is our Passover lamb. That's who he is, right? So verse 7, Jesus went and took the scroll from the right hand of him who sat on the throne. And when he had taken it, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb. Each one had a harp, and they were holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of God's people. And they sang a new song saying, you are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals because you were slain. And with your blood, you purchase for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation. You made them to be a kingdom of priests to serve our God, and they will reign on the earth. Verse 11, then I looked and heard the voice of many angels, numbering thousands upon thousands and 10,000 times 10,000. They encircled the throne of the living creatures and the elders. All right, here's the second reason. The first reason we worship God, the true and beautiful God, is because God gives us hope, right? He stands in between what is and what will be, and he enacts the plan to make what will be into reality, right? The second reason we worship is because worship unites us across our differences, all right? So if you were to look at this passage again, you would see, because you were slain, you were worthy to open this, to take the scroll and to open its seals, because you were slain, and with your blood you purchased for God persons from every tribe and language and people and nation. Do you read later in Revelation 7? After this I looked, and there before me was a great multitude that no one can count, from every nation, every tribe, every people, every language, standing before the throne and before the Lamb. They were wearing white robes and were holding palm branches in their hands, and they cried out in a loud voice, salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb. Why is worship such a strong and important value for us? Well, it's because, I mean, I don't know if you know this or not, but in the scriptures, there's really only one place when we see this kind of picture of all people gathered together. From every tribe, every nation, every tongue, every language. There's only one place where that happens in all of the scripture. You can look all over scripture and find there's only one place where that happens. And guess where that happens? At the feet of Jesus in worship. Worship is the only place that holds all of our particularity, all of our collective identities. Worship is the one place, I mean, the one place that holds inclusive diversity. If you want to be about inclusive diversity, which we are about as a church, this is a very diverse church, and you've got to be about worship. Because worship is the only place that really unites everybody. You only see that actually happen as people are worshiping together. When we look at the diversity of this church, I mean, you just look around, you can look and see that there are people that maybe don't look like you. Well, how does that actually happen? Let me tell you, it's an act of God. It's because of worship. We're here because of Jesus. We're not here because of me. We're not here because of any pastors. We're not here because of Steve. We're not here because of our founding pastors. We are here for one reason and one reason alone. Only the reality of Jesus' supremacy as we worship him can make this possible, guys. I mean, like, turn around for a moment and make awkward contact with somebody. Eye contact. Just, like, look at someone, you know? I mean, like, listen, I mean, you don't have to do that if you don't want to, but I'm going to stand here until you do it, I guess, but here's the thing. I mean, like, don't you have friends now because you've come here to this community that you never would have met in any other circumstance? Don't you have friends here? Like, don't you have friends in this church, like people that you would actually call family, that never would have happened if you hadn't darkened the door of this church? Isn't that true? Can you just do the awkward eye contact thing one more time? Just look, there are friends in this room. It never would have happened but for worship. Right? Like, look at all this friendship that has bloomed. Why did it bloom? It didn't bloom because we built a building or we, like, you know, got an address or got a 501c3 or whatever that thing is. It happened because of Jesus. Worship is the one thing that unites all the collective identities of every single person. Somehow in the throne room, we can be together. Turning back to the passage, the third reason, verse 12, in a loud voice, they were saying, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wealth and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and praise, to receive all of our power." We lay it at the throne to receive all of our wealth, to receive our best wisdom, to receive our best strength, to receive all of that from us, and honor and glory and praise. You are worthy to receive all that. And then verse 13, "Then I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and on the sea and all that is in them saying, to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be praise and honor and glory and power forever and ever." The four living creatures said, "Amen," and the elders fell down and worshiped. Why is worshiping the true and beautiful God such an important value for us? Why is it our first value? What gives us hope? It also unites us. We are a diverse church. It's only possible because of Jesus. And the third reason, finally, is because he's worthy. He's worthy. He is worthy. He's worthy to open the scrolls. Because of his sacrifice, because of his victory and resurrection, he's worthy. He's worthy to receive the praise song of our lives. When we first discussed these values, church council looked at me and said, "Wait, why is worship not on the list?" So for some reason, the first iteration didn't have worship. I was just thinking maybe, well, that's kind of, let's take that for, isn't that what we do? Isn't worship what we do? I'm like, no, it needs to actually be articulated. We need to say it. We need to have worship as our first value. And I'm so glad they did, because worship has been a legacy value of the Vineyard ever since the Vineyard started. This church and also the movement of churches, it's been all about worship. In the 80s and the early 90s, Vineyard churches were like the global worship leaders. They wrote songs that the church was singing all over the world, right? Worship is such an important part of us. I'll say more about that in a moment. And I guess I just want to say, everything we do here, this is what it's about. I'm not trying to build my brand, guys. I'm not here you can't find Ted Kim Ministries International anywhere. That's not what this is about. Our pastors aren't here. We're not here because we're trying to actually, create a platform for ourselves so that we can go itinerant and go travel all over the world and whatnot. That's not why we're here. That's not why we're here. Recently I recorded, so how many of you know what YouVersion is? YouVersion is like the app that Life Church TV, put out, it's for the Holy Bible. Millions of people read it. Millions of people follow their Instagram account. And they asked me some months ago to record a video teaching for them. And so I did, and they posted it on their Instagram feed and whatnot, guess how many people I told about that? Nobody. Nobody. I didn't tell anybody about it. So I'm not trying to build my brand. In fact, I was probably the only person that got one of those videos that didn't have like, well, find him here and here's where this church is. I'm like, I didn't give him any of that information because simply this is not what it's about. Now, if you're doing that thing, bless you. Bless you. Go do it. Go do it for the glory of God. But that's not what we're about. This is about Jesus. This whole thing is about God. I mean, this is worthy as the Lamb, not worthy as me. Worthy as the Lamb. He's worthy of the praise song of our lives. He's worthy of every recognition we can give him. He's worthy of all the praise that we have that we can muster. This is all about Jesus. Every decision that we make is informed by Jesus, not our comfort, not our convenience, not our selfish desire. And by the way, we know that lives are best lived when they're lived in worship, don't we? I mean, when our lives are best lived not for our own sake, but for somebody else's. Our lives are best lived when we live lives in service of the someone rather than the something that we have in our hearts, right? We know that, and we know that it's far better to give than to receive. We think that worship is the hopeful future for every single person, whether they are Christian or not. You know, that's what worship is about. That's all we care about. That's what we want. We want that for you. We want that for ourselves, right? So God forbid that we would take any of that glory for ourselves. This is our first value because we want all the glory to go to him, because we want him to be high and lifted up, because we want to give him the glory that he is due. That's why we do this. There's no other reason. If you're kind of wondering, like, I wonder why they did that. It's not because I want to build my own platform. I'm telling you. I mean, you might look and find Ted Kim Ministries International online, but it's not me. It might look like me, but it's not me. I just want you to know it's not me. There are other Ted Kims out there. You know, it's always a surprise to me because Ted is like a very uncommon name that like immigrant parents would actually say, we're going to call him Ted. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. Like, where did they get that name? Like, they had to look. I'll stop talking about that. But anyway, that's not what it's about. And that's I think what we want to establish from the beginning. Everything that we do here flows from this reality of Revelation 5. That's what we're about. And so how do we as a church express that value? Well, we do it, of course, through our lives, right? You just ask yourself the question, if your life played a melody, what kind of song would that be? Would it be a praise song to the one who has loved us so very much? And what kind of song would your life actually be? But speaking of songs, the other way that we've expressed it for years has been singing. And you might think, maybe you have a different church experience and you come here and you're like, wow, they sure do sing a lot. The only time that I sing is when I'm at a concert. But now that we've got like 25 minutes of singing to start, I don't do singing I don't do singing anywhere in my life. You know, but here at church, we do singing. Well, why do we do it? It's because this is how it all started, guys. You know, when the Vineyard Movement first started, it started in a little living room in Yorba Linda, California. John Wimber and his wife, Carol, they started with this little small group in a living room. And what did they do? They sang. They sang and they sang and they sang. Here's what Carol Wimber wrote about those meetings. Here's some of her realizations. Our worship blessed God. We realized that it was for God alone. We realized that it was not just a vehicle of preparation for the pastor's sermon. After learning about the central place of worship in our meetings, there were many instances in which all we did was worship God for an hour or two. You know, and by the way, this was a living room. So this wasn't like a show, okay? This was like a living room. So it wasn't like they had a full band and they had all the smoke going and everything. Like, wow, this is really entertaining. No, it wasn't that. What it was somebody with a guitar singing very simple songs. Why did they start writing songs? Why did the Vineyard start writing songs? Because they're like, we ran out of songs. We need like 1 to 2 hours of songs if we're going to do this thing. And so that's actually, this living room informs the way that we do worship here. If you have come here and you've wondered, okay, I think this is kind of a large church. I wonder when they're going to do the smoke machines thing. I just want you to know we're never going to do that. We're just never going to do that. Never. You're never going to walk in here and go, is something on fire? You know, we're just not going to do that. You know, the living room informs the thing that we do here. You might be wondering, why is there such a small band? I miss when we had the full band. Well, guys, I'd miss it too, and we're going to get the full band. I mean, we don't have that much room up here right now, so we've got a smaller band. But I love this. You know why? Because it's sort of a re-embodiment of how we started. Sorry, that's my Siri. We started in a living room. This is like an opportunity to go back to the living room. Because one of the things that John and Carol Wimber realized is the living room actually becomes a throne room. This whole thing that we're talking about in Revelation 5, somehow the vineyard realized very early on that if they did that, if they leaned into singing, at some point, the heavenly scene of Revelation 5 would actually begin to happen here. So maybe it's not grandiose. Maybe it's not spectacular. And we don't have a lot of flashing lights or whatever, but that's okay to me. Because the whole thing is about the Lamb. The whole thing is about Jesus. The whole thing is about him being worthy. And by the way, when the living room becomes the throne room, what does that mean? That means that God's presence is here among us. So I'm going to invite the band to come back up. They're going to lead us in one last song here. But when the living room becomes the throne room, that means God is among us. And when God is among us, all sorts of things can happen. People can get healed. You can see signs and wonders, right? You can see people get encouragement. You can see people actually getting prophetic words for one another. You can see all sorts of things happen when a living room becomes a throne room. And so my last challenge for you as we stand up and sing this song is, would you have a little expectation when we sing? Would you have a little expectation knowing that the thing that's happening here is actually more than music? It's more than music. The living room becomes a throne room to the King who walks among us and who makes all things new because he is so worthy. And so if you would stand with me, we're going to sing one last song. Brian, thank you. He's going to lead us in this song. We're just going to sing it. Can I encourage you to have a little expectation as you sing? Can I encourage you as you sing to maybe not think about what it can give you, but what you can give God. And then in that giving of God, here's the thing about the mutuality of the kingdom. When we give to God things, he so richly gives back to us. Could you experience that? Some of you here are in need of a little of encouragement, aren't you? Maybe you've come today and you've been like, this week has been really tough. School has started again, and I'm a parent. Or school has started again, and I'm a student. Or any number of things that you're experiencing. Could I just encourage you that in this space of worship, as we sing, things could possibly change?